This is The Thirsty Developer, episode number 30, for Saturday, August 9th, 2008. Tech Ready Talk. Hello, everyone. This is Larry Clarkin. I'm actually joined by a special guest co-host and a guest interviewer today. Brian, can you introduce yourself to the audience?
Thanks, Larry. This is Brian Gorbett, and I am a developer evangelist out of the Midwest District, a new addition to the Midwest District team.
Yeah, and Dave is on vacation this week, and we wish Dave the best in driving his family out to Colorado. Have fun there, Dave. Brian, you've been with the team now a couple of months, and we're happy to have you. You live in the Chicago area?
I do. I'm currently living right downtown Chicago, which is great, coming from another small Midwest town of Cleveland, Ohio. It's nice to be right in the city and close to the work and close to the office.
And in addition to co-hosting, you know, this week and next, while Dave's on vacation, you did a couple interviews while you're out at Tech Ready, which is an internal Microsoft training conference. We're going to roll the tape on those in a minute. But in addition, you're actually going to start creating some content for Thirsty Developer beyond the occasional guest interview, right?
That's right. Yeah. So getting adjusted to the new team, I thought it would be a good idea to get out there and start using some video prowess that I aspire to, and start possibly getting some video interviews with folks as we keep expanding out on what Thirsty Developer is. So it was a great opportunity to do the first round of podcasts as I was at this event, and we'll see how we can keep expanding the Thirsty Developer property out there with some video.
Yeah, and also I think we're also going to sneak in some screencasts. So as we talk about something, like if we're talking about WCF as a topic, maybe we'll do a 10-minute screencast on how to get started with WCF or something like that. But you're going to shoot a lot of the fun events. The audio is great, but when you're having an event like, you know, last year we had a great Halo pre-launch party, you know, you need video to capture some of the magic of events like that. And we're glad that you bring the video prowess to the team. Dave and I, as we've always said, we have a face for podcasting, so
that's good. No, I think it would only be right, though, to probably start the first one out with maybe a video interview of you two. That would make the best I think first video of Thirsty Developers, so people know who you are and what you do, and, you know, who are the folks behind Thirsty Developer. So we'll have to work on that one.
We can talk about that one, but should we go ahead and talk about the conversations that you had when you were in Seattle last week? How was Seattle anyway?
Yeah, it was good. You know, it was actually really nice. I am I'm a big fan of Seattle because I'm not a big fan of the heat. And so while I think in Chicago it was pretty warm, while I was out in Seattle, it was actually really nice. So it was a good time to be out in Seattle attending this event. And it was a week-long event, so it was fairly exhausting, but good stuff at the same time.
So you actually had a chance to talk with a couple people in the first interview. Let's go ahead and just dive into it. But who was the interview with?
So I had the opportunity to talk to Scott Guthrie, the big Scott Goo.
The Goo?
The big Goo, yeah. So he was gracious enough to spend some time with us, although he didn't have much time, and we'll talk about that as we go into the podcast. But he was very, very limited on his amount of time. It was a Sunday, after all, and it was later in the evening. And he had a very particular situation that he was getting back to. So without ruining the suspense of the end of the podcast, I won't dive into that till we hear it.
Okay, and you guys, most of the topic is on .NET 3.5 SP1.
Yeah, so I thought it was a pretty relevant conversation. Prior to me sitting down with Scott, he was just kind of having an open Q&A with some other members of the team, and that was one of the topics that he wanted to dive into, just talk to people about what Service Pack 1 is going to be all about, as well as, you know, differentiate what MVC is all about, too. So I think we spend just a couple minutes talking about that and why it's not ever going to be the full replacement to web forms, as some people may have been worried about. But yeah, it primarily was around Service Pack 1, MVC, talking a little bit about what's going on in Scott's life as he's now become a corporate vice president, recently promoted, and, you know, what he's doing now and where he's at.
Well, let's roll the tape on the interview.
So, hey, everyone. This is Brian Gorbett, and I am here in Seattle, Washington, with Corporate Vice President of the .NET Developer Division, Scott Guthrie. How are you doing, Scott?
Good, thanks. Thanks for having me here.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, welcome to the Thirsty Developer, our podcast out of the Midwest District. I'm kind of the roving reporter for it today. But I just want to, you know, talk to you about a couple things. One, we are pretty excited about Service Pack 1. I know we talked a little bit about that earlier today, so maybe you could just kind of give us a brief overview of what that means for developers, you know, today. And I think one of the most interesting things that is kind of included in the download bits and beta right now is this idea where it's still called Arrowhead, you know, the code name for the .NET client profile. So maybe you could talk a little bit about that and kind of what that means for developers.
Sure, yeah. So a little bit later on this summer, we're going to ship .NET 3.5 SP1 and Visual Studio 2008 SP1. And, you know, like typical service packs, you know, we focus on, you know, bug fixes and performance improvements. This service pack's a little bit bigger than others, and it also includes a number of great functionality improvements as well. For client application development, we focused a lot around startup performance, and I think we have about 40% for large applications performance win around startup. So if you have a large Windows Forms or a large WPF application, and in fact even like a large ASP.NET application, you get benefits as well. You know, just sort of faster load time, mm-hmm. feels more responsive. We've done improvements, like you mentioned, in terms of having a special client version of the .NET framework.
Okay.
Has the same binary files as the full .NET framework, so it's not different APIs or anything like that, but it's a subset of all the libraries,
okay.
Specific to client development.
All right.
And when you build your application now, you can optionally say, I want to target the client profile. VS will give you compile error if you're trying to use any framework library that's not in just the client subset when you do that. But the benefit there is then that on a machine that does not have the .NET framework installed, the client profile is much smaller and much faster to set up.
Right.
And so specifically if you're targeting, say, applications on the web, you know, you don't have to download the full .NET framework, and you can build a nice consumer client-friendly install process as part of that.
Nice.
Then we're making a lot of improvements to WPF, as well as Windows Forms. A lot of feature improvements around performance, graphics, data, as well as improvements around effects API and kind of the foundations for our data grid and ribbon controls that will be coming out a little bit as well. So,
awesome.
So lots of improvements for client apps. For web apps then, with ASP.NET, we're adding, releasing something called Dynamic Data.
Okay.
Which makes it much easier to build data-driven ASP.NET sites.
Right.
We're shipping a new routing engine that lets you do URL routing in a much richer way. And then in the data space, in addition to Dynamic Data, we're also adding into .NET 3.5 SP1 support for our link-to-entities,
right.
Entity framework, object relational okay. mapper, as well as our codename Astoria, but basically REST support. So you can expose RESTful URLs from within your ASP.NET sites as well.
Okay.
So lots of improvements
yeah.
in development. And then the Visual Studio side, lots of perf improvements, lots of improvements around WPF tooling, the
okay.
design time experience, and then also improvements in the web development experience. Things like we now support JavaScript IntelliSense
oh, nice.
For any AJAX library. In the past, we had really good IntelliSense for ASP.NET AJAX.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're also adding it for, you know, jQuery and Prototype. And
oh, really?
Yahoo
awesome.
UI and a whole bunch of other libraries as well. Lots of AJAX improvements for ASP.NET AJAX that we're including, and you know, lots of good stuff. It's a
yeah.
free service pack.
Yeah, nice.
I think people will find it's a pretty
yeah.
nice release.
And so, and it kind of just as a separate topic, MVC keeps coming up, and that's kind of new for web developers now, and that is not going to be part of Service Pack 1, right? That's still going to be kind of a separate download. Is that's true?
Yeah. So the ASP.NET MVC option is going to be a separate download.
Okay.
We do have some of the routing engine features, which is kind of a core
right.
part of ASP.NET MVC in Service Pack 1.
Okay, got it.
It'll also be able to ship separately as part of just the ASP.NET MVC setup if you don't have Service Pack 1 installed.
Yep.
And Yeah, basically the MVC option is it's an option.
Yep.
You know, it's there's definitely WebForms is not going away.
Right, right.
We have lots of improvements coming out for WebForms.
Okay, good.
With the next release of ASP.NET, and we did a whole bunch in SB1 as well.
Great.
But you know, there's always been a class of developers that have asked for a more patterns based, testing friendly.
Right.
Framework approach,
right, right,
for doing ASP.NET apps, and ASP.NET MVC, you know, provides a nice way to do that.
Yeah,
it will be fully supported. It'll ship as part of the next full release of .NET as well.
Yeah,
but we're going to do this sort of an out of band, you know, separate download that you can install and use. On top of any .NET 3.5 box.
Awesome. Yeah, and I think I just saw on your blog, as a matter of fact, that just our latest preview release 3 or 4 actually does have support for even the Express Edition of Visual Studio.
Yep.
So people could start to take a look at it there, too.
Yeah, yeah. We support the Express Edition. One of the things that we're doing as part of the .NET 3.5 SB1 and VS 2008 SB1 is adding support for both class library projects as well as both ASP.NET website projects, which already existed, as well as ASP.NET web application projects into the Express Edition of Visual Web Developer.
Awesome.
And with that support, then, you can now also use MVC with Visual Web Developer Express as well.
Okay, cool, nice.
You know, in general, it's if you know ASP.NET and you're using WebForms today and happy,
keep doing it, right?
Keep doing it.
Yeah. Okay,
yeah,
cool.
It's definitely not... Yeah, yeah. It's definitely not like, oh, that's the, you know, I think some people think MVC, oh, that sounds like
it's a new
cool
thing.
New thing,
yeah.
Or something.
Yeah.
You know, for some people find it cool. A lot of people go, hey,
right,
I don't understand why I want this.
Right.
It's, you know, we often use the analogy of kind of motorcycle versus a car.
Got it.
One's not better than the other.
Right,
unless it's raining. But
that's true.
You know, but they appeal to different developers.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a subset of people that I think will be interested in MVC and will get a lot of get very excited about MVC. That's great.
Yep.
But you know, to be very clear, there's tons of feature enhancements and work that we're doing for WebForms, and we're definitely not encouraging people to move.
Right.
It's you know, if you do really want an MVC option, great. We now have one for you.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. So I know you're running here, so I want to I get the question from, you know, the community I serve a lot is that, has your role really changed at all now that you kind of are you got promoted recently, or not fairly recently, to corporate vice president of the .NET Developer Division? Now, so does that change your daily role? Because you're like crazy busy doing all kinds of things. You still blog, you know, you run multiple teams. I mean, so has it changed at all, or
not really? I mean,
really,
I
it's title.
Ran the same teams that I ran before. I did basically the same job as I did before.
Okay.
So it doesn't change that much.
Okay.
It means, you know, I can no longer sell stock when I want to, and I can go to jail for you know, Sarbanes-Oxley reasons.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it brings all these fun benefits.
Right. But, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, it doesn't thankfully change my day to day job.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. So it's Sunday, and I know you're actually on leave.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And congratulations are in order for you and your family.
Yeah.
And do you want to mention what's going on there? Or?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah. It's we had our first baby about 6 weeks ago.
Awesome.
So yeah, I'm actually officially right now.
Officially on leave. That's working out real well.
Mental leave right now.
But
came in on Sunday to do this talk.
Awesome.
For an event here for some Microsoft employees. So, but yeah, that's why, you know, a few people ask, hey, why has your blog gotten quiet? I'm staying up late, but I'm changing diapers and stuff writing blog posts. But
right.
Hopefully at some point soon I'll actually pick it up a little bit more and get on the blog.
Yeah.
Definitely we'll keep going on the blog.
Part. Okay. Great. Well, I don't want to keep you from your little one any longer. So thanks a lot, Scott, and I appreciate you coming on Thirsty Developer.
Cool. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, Brian, you've actually fulfilled one of the dreams that I had when we started the Thirsty Developer podcast, and we started with an interview, you know, last like November, and I said, well, we've got to get Scott Gu on the show, and now you've gotten Scott Gu on the show, and I want to thank you for that.
Hey, no problem, I kind of confirmed with him after, now that you've heard the podcast and realized that he was running home because he is technically on leave from just recently having a little mini Scott Gu. So he was gracious enough to take a few minutes to come out and talk to us. But he did say that when he does have more time, he would love to come back on and do a full-blown podcast with us when he has more time and we have a topic that we can talk about.
I think we'll have to take him up on that. Maybe, you know, in the fall, there'll be a conference or something where we can, you know, bump into him.
He just might be at some conference in the fall.
You know, you only had about 10, 12 minutes with Scott Gu there, so we actually decided to put a second interview, you know, from your time out at Tech Ready. And who'd you talk with in your second interview?
Yeah, I had another excellent opportunity to talk to maybe somebody that our community doesn't know all that well, but probably should as we move into what we call our next fiscal year. But Mark Hinsbow is the general manager of the U.S. DPE organization. So he is like our boss's 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 boss, something like that. But he is, you know, what I really liked about Mark in talking to Mark is that he's totally down to earth. He comes from a coding background, and he could really relate to the community that we're out there talking to. So it was a great talk I had with Mark.
So let's roll the tape, let the audience hear it.
Hey, everyone. This is Brian Gorbett, and I'm here in Seattle, Washington, with our U.S. General Manager of Developer and Platform Evangelism, Mark Hinsbow. Thanks for joining us, Mark.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. You know, I wanted to start, Mark, by asking you, what basically does that mean, and what does this role mean for you? And this is a new role for you, but as we were talking earlier, this has been kind of a passion of yours, obviously, your entire career at Microsoft around DPE or our developer and platform evangelism. Maybe you could share with our listeners really just kind of your experience prior to being in this role, and then you know, what may have changed since what you have done.
No, absolutely. So, yes, I love DPE. You know, I've been since I joined in Microsoft. I'm originally Danish, so I joined Microsoft in Denmark. Okay. I was the first DPE lead there when we joined, or when Microsoft formed DPE.
Oh, okay.
Before we called it DPE.
Right.
It was called the .NET group.
Okay.
And my original charter was to launch the .NET framework, you know, connect with the developer communities, and here's a bunch of money, and go do it.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Nice, yeah. So can't complain right? Yeah.
We have a little more structure now. Well, I didn't have that much money.
You know, right.
Moved to corporate and got to see globally what happens across the world, which was fantastic. So worked in DPE in corporate, you know, part of setting the strategy, part of driving the field organizations, doing a lot of the investments. While I was in corporate, we grew from about 300 evangelists to 1,500 evangelists worldwide.
Wow.
And now in the U.S., in the biggest market and most exciting market in the world. So it's
great.
Fantastic. I love it.
That's awesome. Great, great. So in this role now is kind of overseeing and running this market for the U.S. or our organization for the U.S., what are some of the strategies that, you know, we just started a new fiscal year in the field. We're always trying to make sure we're aligned with what our major strategies are. So maybe we could talk a little bit about what you're thinking of and what we're planning for this fiscal year, and how we can start to evangelize to our developers what those strategies are.
Will do. So I might back up a little bit, just for the sake of our listeners. If you know, the reason why we have an evangelist in the development platform evangelism organization in Microsoft is that we're a platform company, right? So a lot of our success, obviously, has always been built around the fact that we have a lot of partners, developers out there building great solutions on top of the platform technologies we deliver.
Right.
And that, at the end of the day, that's our mission, right? Our mission is to do whatever we can do to make developers and partners successful building great stuff on our platform.
Okay.
And I think that's why you are here as well.
Yeah.
Like, we love to see how people take our technologies and do funky, crazy things
out there.
So you sort of have to have that in the back of the mind when you say, what's DPE's strategy? Because our strategy is always to be a little bit ahead of the game, so to speak. You know, development cycles are 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, you know. So our job is to take some of the stuff out maybe before it's ready for prime time.
Right.
You know, get developers excited and get a whole ecosystem of great solutions rolling. So the big thing, obviously, here right now is software plus services.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be a huge focus on us for us the next, I think, 2-3 years as a DPE organization. It's both just a straightforward evolution in some kinds of what we've been doing for a while. You know, with .NET, you started with building services.
Right.
Those services can now be exposed and delivered, you know, as service, software as a services.
Sure.
So some of that is just straightforward evolution. But there are also some pretty revolutionary things. I'll plug the PDC for our listeners.
Right.
You know, some of the things you and I can't really talk about yet,
right.
But we'll unveil it at PDC. There are going to be some pretty revolutionary things coming out in terms of how you build applications in the future and go deploy.
Right.
So that's going to be a huge focus for DPE over the next year. And then that sort of bridges to a couple of other things we've been working on anyway over the last couple of years. One is the whole web infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of what we see on the web today is transforming slowly into the application platform or services platform of today. So as you know, we work a lot with the top websites, with some of the key enterprise customers on how do you build on our stack and what's the value proposition of the Microsoft stack in the web space.
It's
a big focus for us as well. And then the other S in S plus S is the client side.
Sure.
So a lot of it, as we went to the web, as people have been talking about software as a service instead of software plus services, has been, hey, it'll all be delivered in a browser and there's no differentiation in the endpoint. I personally don't believe in that. We have more processing power in the laptop than we had in the data centers when I was a kid growing up.
Right.
You have even more processing power just in the graphics chip.
Okay.
So you look at the experiences you can deliver on that. You look at mobile phones. The mobile phone today probably delivers an experience similar to Windows 95.
Yeah,
so you
absolutely
have the same computers where we delivered Windows 95 in your pocket.
Yeah.
So I really believe that the other S plus S is the rich experience, the way you consume services. Some of it will be in a browser. Some of it will be in a rich client. Some of it will be in a cell phone. And that's a big focus for us in DPE as well. Help customers and partners build great, compelling experience. Some of that could be, you know, with CAD CAM vendors that build great 3D visualization of processes all the way over to consumer scenarios. If you've gone to Lego and you look at their Lego Builder for kids, that's a fully installed client where you can work with a 3D Bricks and build. So all those scenarios.
Yeah, and I think you brought up a great point and great segue into the ecosystem we have and partners that are now building on these technologies. I think AutoCAD just released their latest edition of their package, and it's fully WPF. And it's awesome to see how those partners that really are delivering our value just as much as we are out in the field evangelizing. Yeah. They're kind of our extension of the evangelism organization who's out there building the rich clients or building really cool stuff on our technologies. And I was at the Worldwide Partner Conference a couple weeks ago and had an opportunity to talk to a lot of partners, and they're building stuff on it. So maybe you could talk about where some of that focus is within our organization and how are we reaching out to ISVs and people that are building stuff and even custom web shops and that market that maybe we have not focused a lot of concentrated effort on, but because they've always been part of our community, they've just naturally been an extension of that.
I think the interesting thing here, there's a technology trend and then there's a business trend.
Yep.
So from the technology trend, we're going to deliver that to ISVs, to agencies, to custom dev shops, all the technologies you need to build software plus services, clients in the future. That's sort of, if you want, straightforward. It's not necessarily always straightforward, but that's part of our core org, and we're going to deliver that. Some of the stuff that's a little bit more tricky is how do you manage the business transition?
Yeah.
And the fun part there is we're going through the same transition as well. We're an ISV as well.
That's true.
Microsoft. So how do we do the transition into software plus services? And how do we do it in such a way together with our partners? So some of our joint business models, and that was a lot of what our Worldwide Partner Conference was about, our traditional business models of, hey, we ship Windows Server, we give a CD to a partner, the partner either does a custom solution or has a solution on top, and we then go deploy that at an end customer. That changes.
Right.
Because some of the services, Microsoft will end up hosting some of them. Some of our services, the partners will host and own.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them, they will build brand new. Some of it, for ages to come, probably forever, the end customer will host.
Right.
So how does the ecosystem change to allow that to happen?
Right.
We're going through that. What's the pricing structure that doesn't totally make partners say, hey, there's no business in this for me. There might be for you, Microsoft, but there's no business for me.
Right.
In the new software plus services world, Microsoft is still a partner-led company. That's still our fundamental strategy.
Yeah.
We're going to deliver platform foundation. Some of that might be hosted in the cloud by us, but it is about how do we create a partner opportunity around that. And that was some of what you saw at WPC come out. How do you take a thing like Hosted Exchange, even when Microsoft hosts it, and add value as a partner on it and go to a customer? We're not going to go directly to the customer on this. We're going to go with a partner channel.
Right.
We're working with our hosters in different areas as well. You know, so we're going to give them the platform technologies to host it themselves.
Sure.
Some of it, they might just integrate. We'll see hybrid models where they host some services. They'll integrate the services we host and pull it together and deliver it to the end customer.
Right.
We're already seeing some of that. But that's tricky.
Yeah, it really is.
So I'd say we have, we're starting to have really good technical guidance. We just announced an S plus S roadmap for ISV specifically.
Okay.
There are S plus S competency centers, and as you know, we have evangelists that are dedicated to it. So we have a lot of technical guidance you can take advantage of. The business side of it, I won't say we have as codified. It's not like you have a package here, go adopt it. But we're super open to discuss how Microsoft thinks about the transformation and share that with our partners as well. And at WPC, they also unveiled some business tools that the partners could take. So you can model your revenue streams. What is changing the business model mean in my bottom line? You know, does it hurt the cash I can put in the pocket every month?
Right, exactly.
Which is pretty important for all of us as well.
Yeah.
So there are tools for that as well.
Okay.
Which is really just based on how does changing that model for us, you know, change our cash flow, and then we work with some of the early adoption partners on how did it change it for them.
Right.
And then providing that as something everyone can take benefit of.
Right. Yeah. I always get, when we're out in the community, I always get, you know, why doesn't Microsoft just build this? Or why doesn't Microsoft just do this? Why doesn't Microsoft, you know, why don't they own that and just kind of do it? And I think a lot of people forget just how important our partner ecosystem is to Microsoft. I hear at different conferences, you know, anywhere between 94% to 96% of all of our revenue as a business comes from our partners. So, you know, what you were describing is a tricky situation. You know, it's how do we make sure we balance that and have the right balance, and making sure that as evangelists we can go out and make sure that partners have the right technology available to them and the right guidance, while still, you know, providing some value maybe into different organizations within Microsoft, into partner groups that can help them better strategize their business value too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it does remain core. At the end of the day, we're a platform company.
Yeah.
Whether that platform lives in the cloud or it lives installed on a machine doesn't really matter.
Right.
And to be honest, I mean, you talked about WPF. I mean, how interesting is a framework in itself? It's first when it gets used for that AutoCAD application that it comes to life.
Oh yeah.
The framework in itself is boring. It does nothing.
Right.
You know, you power it up and you look at a blank screen.
Exactly. Right, yeah. There's nothing really exciting about that. Right, yeah. It's not until you actually see somebody do something with it and build something exciting. You know, it's another good example was that with Coca-Cola in Europe, where they built this really interactive site and they used all of our live APIs on it. So it's exciting to start to see how all those services that we have had for a long time be exposed to our partners. And as you said, you know, at PDC, we'll start to really see an emergence of how that's going to look in the future. So very cool. Very cool. So what is it? What is, you know, as we're finishing up here, and I know you're on a busy schedule. So what is your kind of day to day look like? I had a podcast with Scott Guthrie, and I asked him kind of the same thing, and he recently changed roles and or was promoted. And so, you know, everybody always wonders, you know, what does a day-to-day look like for somebody that's kind of running that organization within Microsoft? As you said, it was super important to be kind of in touch with our field, but still be able to maintain the business ultimately. So what does it look like for you, you know, in your role as the GM for our org?
So every day is different.
Yeah,
so
sure.
I'll have to say what does a month look like but if, you know, coming into the role, I've been enrolled 2 months now, and our fiscal year's just ended. The first thing I had to do was really get down to planning for what happens over the next year. What's our priorities? Yeah. What are we going to invest? So a lot of my job was picking the right priorities, putting money against them, picking the right people to go drive that forward.
Right.
So you've seen some of that. Who are the teams that are responsible for each of our priorities?
Right.
Doing some investments. We shifted some investments from one area to another.
Right.
We invested some new both people and money. So that was a big part of you know, coming into the organization. We're also closing a fiscal, and we also happen to sell developer tools.
Yep.
So every week I was in revenue updates.
Oh, right.
How are we doing?
Yeah,
are we meeting our quota?
Sure.
Then I've gone to a lot of, you know, part of it is meeting customers and partners, getting the input on what we can do better, how we better can support them. So I did go to the partner conference.
Okay.
I've gone to a lot of other different events and or specific customer visits or partner visits to work with them. Meeting you, right?
Yeah,
like
right,
for the first time.
You know, right.
We have a lot of evangelists around you as I haven't met yet.
Sure,
so
absolutely.
I've gone to all these internal events we have to meet people. I've gone traveling around the country. So that's what a lot of my time.
Yeah.
Then I'm also part of the North American leadership team.
Okay.
So I also sit on the management team that takes decisions more broadly in the U.S. than just DPE.
Okay. Wow.
So some of my work is we put a set of strategic funds aside at the North American level that we wanted to go after specific areas. So I was part of that prioritization process for which things to invest in, and then I ended up being the sponsor for some specific investments and then go working with the teams to land the money and then go deliver on what we promised.
Yeah.
So that's what my day looked like.
You are super busy then, right? Yeah. So
then there's a little bit of time spent in Outlook doing email.
Yeah, right, exactly, yeah. Yeah, that's I can't imagine. You'd almost have to have like the super rule system in Outlook just to manage all that busyness.
And then I try to do a little bit of coding myself.
Yeah,
I don't lose touch. So I did a little game in X&A for my kids.
Oh, very nice.
So they could shoot at each other faces on it.
No
so,
kidding.
No.
Oh, I got to see that.
So that was fun.
You'll have to let us see that sometime.
You bet.
Yeah, very cool. Well, thanks a lot, Mark. I appreciate you taking the time. The listeners of Thirsty Developer, thank you. And hope to talk to you again maybe down the road. And once you're kind of we're halfway through this year, see how we're progressing. And maybe have you on again.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
Thanks, Brian.
Well, that was another cool interview, Brian. I have to say that I'm a little embarrassed because it sounds like recently Mark Kinsbo has had the chance to write more code than I have.
It was absolutely stunning to me too that he told me he just finished up an X&A game for his kids to play, and I was like, wow, that I aspire to be a leader in this organization that can still code. That's totally awesome.
Yeah, and I think that kind of teaches him or keeps him in touch, with his primary audience as the head of developer and platform evangelism. You know, he's responsible for Microsoft's face to the developers in the U.S. Now he has 150 people or so working for him, like you and me. But it's good that he kind of keeps his fingers in what's important on the technology side.
Yeah, exactly, and he's totally excited to get out there and talk to the community and be more in the face of the community instead of just kind of this leader at Microsoft that runs a good size organization. And I think you can look for probably him to be out in the Midwest area within the next couple months. At least that's what he committed to me when we were sitting down and talking. So I'm looking forward to that.
That's great. I look forward to having him in the area to meet some of our listeners. And and because we have a worldwide podcast and definitely we have people all over the U.S. listening to us, maybe we can keep an eye on Mark and let people know when he's going to be in the area. And you can give feedback to, an executive level person at Microsoft, about what we can do better, to reach the developer audience.
Yeah, good idea.
So should we move into the blog you should know?
Sure.
I kind of surprised you with this. I don't think that you realize that was one of the duties of a co-host on the Thirsty Developer to come up with the blog you should know.
The job description gets longer and longer as I sit through these. So the one I picked is actually one that I've been following for a little while. As our listeners probably don't know, I have an affection for design, and not just our design tools, but Adobe's design tools as well. And one of the blogs that I follow is Jack Nack on Adobe. And Jack is a principal product manager for Adobe Photoshop, which is one of the programs in my past life running a developer and designer shop I used really often. And it's good to just follow up on what they're doing out there. So his blog is at blogs.adobe.com/JNack, JNACK.
So is the style of his blog, is it like, for advanced Photoshop professionals, or is it something that a beginner could get something out of?
Yeah, absolutely. And it really is mostly, because he's a principal product manager, he talks about just a whole slew of different things. So he'll talk about maybe a couple tips and tricks on how to use Photoshop, but then he'll dive into how can developers, you know, use Air and Flash and how to interact with those guys within Photoshop too. So it's all over the place. So I think it's a blog that anybody can just get involved with without having to be a super top Photoshop editor.
Yeah, and I'm a real newbie to Photoshop myself. I've been, I've been shooting pictures with 35 millimeter cameras for over 20 years now.
Right.
But I've just recently, in the last year or so, gotten into digital photography, and now I've kind of crossed the line into to getting into more of the professional tools. So I'm actually getting my feet wet with Photoshop right now, and I went all out, Brian. I went with the full Photoshop. I didn't go with the Photoshop Elements, and I think I probably should have started with the Training Wheels one, but I didn't.
No, you know what? I have both, and I honestly think that there are because they made some differentiators within the Elements edition that kind of confuses me when I go back into Elements. So I think it's good to start out, at least in my opinion. I've been using Photoshop for a long time, and I like to stay within the tool that I know the tools, what they do, and you'll be fine. It's actually one of those tools that it's so powerful, but you'll end up probably only using 5% of the power of it, but because that 5% is so powerful, you'll totally appreciate where they're coming from.
Well, I mean, thus far, and I haven't gotten used to Photoshop yet, but I've actually found myself using two different tools. I actually use the Windows Live Photo Gallery for a lot of my photos to get them off the camera, to actually just do some quick edits and to upload things to Flickr. When I want to spend some time with a photo, and really do some cropping and to kind of do some color balancing, then I jump into Photoshop. It's kind of like the return on investment about how much time you want to spend with it. You want to go ahead and use Photoshop when you really want to, make a photo really pop. But if you've got a good one in the camera, I just use Photo Gallery because it's really nice. It's quick download, integrates with Flickr, and I'm up and running. I'm not having to read the manual or go do searching to figure out how to adjust a photo like I am with Photoshop.
Oh yeah, I mean for at least for what I use Photoshop for now, for most of the tasks it's kind of overkill, and I will use something like Live Photo Gallery. I'm even, because I'm an Adobe Illustrator aficionado too, maybe this, we'll keep running on about it, but maybe we'll have a separate podcast about what some of our expression tools are. So I've been messing around with Expression Design, which is actually, and I know, we never like to make that comparison, but it takes the best of both worlds from Illustrator and Photoshop and crams it all into one tool. So I'm kind of getting my feet wet with that and seeing how that works. But so far it's been pretty good.
We actually have an Illustrator podcast, in the pipeline right now. It's been a while, but I've actually, got a commitment from a friend of ours, Anthony, to sit down and talk about how to go from Illustrator all the way through to a XAML application like a WPF one. So that's actually on the docket, and maybe you could be a guest interviewer on that one as well.
Yeah, that would be cool. That'd be super cool.
But let's get to my blog, You Should Know, so we can get the audience back to listening to their next podcast. And it's kind of interesting. I actually went back to what could be the original blog You Should Know, and that is Dave Weiner's Scripting News at scripting.com. And Dave is I like to call him the proto-blogger because, pretty much everybody thinks that, if he didn't invent blogging, then he was standing next to the person that did.
Nice.
His blog actually goes back, 11 or 12 years now. So, and he's actually also, not only did he kind of invent blogging, but he actually invented RSS.
Wow.
Or maybe, was it invented or discovered? It might have always been there, and it's just a matter of, that he kind of, wrapped the name around it or whatever. But Dave is... not only is he one of the prototypical, bloggers, one of the early ones, the guy that invented it, but he's prolific too. Matter of fact, nice. I just pulled up his website today, and he's got 8 or 10 posts out there today, including one about Vista that was not the most complimentary thing in the world, but but he's got some interesting. He's always got an interesting take on anything. So go check out Dave Weiner's scripting.com, or Scripting News is what he calls it.
Nice.
And with that, should we go ahead and wrap up the show?
Absolutely. And thanks, Larry, for inviting me on for my first time, and hopefully you'll be hearing more from me.
All right. As always, we invite you to comment on each and every show at thirstydeveloper.com. If you have general comments about the show, you can send it to thirstydeveloper@live.com. You can reach me at my blog, larryclarkin.com. Brian, your blog is briangorbett.com?
Yep, easy enough.
And and you can also reach us on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and 1,001 other social networks. With that, I guess we'll call it a show. That's the sound effects that we put in the show.